Today's guest, Prosperity Home Mortgage Lender John McCuskey, who needs no introduction because I don't have one. John, welcome to Radio Real Estate.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Now, Prosperity Home Mortgage has been around a very long time, and several years ago, Tracy Ruelas? Is that her last name?
Ruelas.
She was on the program. You've been locally how long?
I moved here in 2003.
Oh, okay. Okay. And you've been in the mortgage business for that long?
I started in 2007, right out of college, actually. Perfect timing.
And you've been with Prosperity Home Mortgage here locally in Santa Barbara for how long?
Just 1 year.
Well, oh, just celebrating the 1 year anniversary. So you are housed out of Berkshire Hathaway's State Street office, and Prosperity Home Mortgage, I guess, is somehow owned by Berkshire Hathaway. So you're a national mortgage lender, your company?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Prosperity Home Loans is owned under the Berkshire Hathaway, umbrella of companies, and we do lend in all 50 states. So it is a nationally recognized company that has a pretty large scale.
And obviously you're in Berkshire Hathaway. I've used your services. What about other agents outside Berkshire Hathaway? Do they find you?
Yes. I mean, most of our business is from referrals from past clients or other agents that we've worked with, and we're free to work with any real estate agent or client outside of the Berkshire network. So we do quite a bit of business in other states, as well as with agents that aren't under the same family umbrella.
Right. That sounds good. So in the last segment, I kind of touched on a text. Before we jump into the topics that we have for you, John McCuskey, Prosperity Home Mortgage. People are questioning, the economy, all these news in the newspaper and the headlines and the stock market's going up and down. I'm trying to track. I'm not seeing any significant change in Santa Barbara in terms of what's pending. I don't know what falls out of escrow. Is that something you've looked at?
Yes, quite a bit. I mean, I have that conversation with borrowers every day. I haven't seen anything slow down, to be honest. We have a steady flow of new borrowers calling us every day. Our closings haven't been falling out due to economic reasons. You know, there's obviously stress in the borrower. They're looking at their bank account balances and, the uncertainty there might be in the future. But when they're on the path to buy a home, they usually follow through and finish that. So, no, I wouldn't have seen any slowdown, and I don't foresee one coming here, at least locally.
Right. Santa Barbara is pretty unique. I imagine there's other areas of the country that, maybe are seeing the impact. But, of course, there's so many cash deals in Santa Barbara. You must hate that.
Well, sometimes they result in a refinance afterwards. But yes, it obviously takes up a big part. I think it's over 40% on the average of our market share right now is cash. So those are a lot of deals left on the table that we can't have access to, obviously. But, we take the good with the bad. It's all we can do.
That's a great stat. Well, I didn't know that. 40%. But you did bring up something I remember doing with a cash buyer. Borrower, and then they sometimes to be strong in the offer, they might throw in cash and then right after close refinance. And the question is always, am I going to get penalized for refinancing rather than it being a new money loan and borrowing the money up front?
That does happen quite a bit. I mean, if people want to be competitive in this market, obviously cash is king, like the old adage. So they'll do a cash out refinance right after closing to recoup some of those funds. They can't recoup all of them, but at least 80% at the most. They are treated generally as a cash out refinance for pricing, but oftentimes any pricing add-ons or rate worsenings are offset for delayed financing is the term it's called. So it's a common practice mainly because these people want to win these homes and there's a lot of people who want to buy them. So if they have the cash, they go all in.
And the price they pay, the penalty in terms of, is it minimal?
It is very minimal. I mean, we're talking maybe 0.125% to interest rate, and that can usually be offset by maybe taking out slightly less cash. It all comes down to loan-to-value ratio, their credit score, et cetera. So, you know, sometimes we can work around that penalty creatively to kind of minimize that risk.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we've covered multiple things that we never said we were going to talk about, but it sure didn't faze you. You got all the ammunition in your holster. You're ready to go. My guest is lender John McCuskey, working out of the Santa Barbara office of Prosperity Home Mortgage. And if someone wants to ask you about loans, what's the best number for you?
805-456-9120.
Okay, John McCuskey, Prosperity Home Mortgage. So back in the day, I mentioned we'd talk about this. Boy, things were just crazy. You mentioned you started in lending in 2007. Stated income loans, no tax returns. It was crazy. No doc, stated income loans, low doc. How has that evolved to today's standard?
Well, those products technically still exist. They do come with a slight penalty of a higher interest rate, and they're usually being funded by a group of private investors. We refer to those loans basically as non-agency these days. So people are familiar with Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, the large government-sponsored entities that buy most of the loans in America, or even just larger banks like a Wells Fargo or a Bank of America. But on the other hand, about 30 to 40% of transactions right now are falling into this bucket called non-agency or non-QM, as we call it on the inside here. And that really caters to people that are high net worth, self-employed, more complicated. You know, they might own a couple businesses and be very tax savvy. So on paper, from a tax return standpoint, they might not look too attractive, but we know they can repay a loan. So stated income loans are still in existence. Sometimes we get CPAs, repair letters, profit and loss loans, bank statement loans. All of those fall into that same category.
You know, that's a significant percentage of loans that still exist. You're calling them non-agency, and the inside vernacular is a non-QM?
Correct.
Which stands for?
Non-qualified mortgage. Huh. So I like to say non-agency just because QM is, we don't need any more terminology. You know, we have enough acronyms in this business.
Right. Non-agency, you know, outside Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. And again, maybe that, you know, the interest rate's slightly higher?
Correct. It is. Yes. But oftentimes when you compare, you know, the amount of income that a client would need to declare with the IRS, that tax penalty is significantly higher than maybe taking a higher interest rate on their mortgage. So when you compare those two options, people can usually say, you know what, I'll pay a 0.5% higher in interest rate because I don't have to pay $30,000 or $40,000 more in income tax.
Well, that kind of opens up a whole nother kettle of fish. It's kind of like, wait a second, these people are making money and not declaring it to the IRS? Is that what we're saying?
No, I'd never say that, but...
but people,
that's a topic for
people
days.
That's it. We got to get a CPA on the phone, and that's and you use letters from CPA. It's very complicated and very very messy. Prosperity Home Mortgage is the company, and the lender is John McCuskey, working out of Santa Barbara. So that's still there. Another question. Second home loans. I remember, you know, someone wants to buy a home. They have a house to sell. They don't want to write an offer subject to the sale of their house. That's non-competitive. Maybe they find something that's been on the market for 60, 90 days and you can get away with it. But what kind of avenues are open to people who want to move on a second home?
Well, that's a great question. So again, we're trying to minimize the terminology here and keep it simple. And I like to call it buying before selling, just to keep it easy. Depending on the borrower, my main goal when I look at those structures for loans is to reduce the fees in the transaction and to minimize any taxable occurrences. So by that, I mean there's always a bridge loan. Bridge loans tend to come with higher fees for transactional costs. There is more risk for the investor. Sometimes we'll set up distributions from retirement accounts. Sometimes we'll use an asset depletion calculation. But overall, it's borrower specific, and oftentimes people aren't aware that these products even exist. So you know, I can do equity lines on people's old homes as well, too, to get them a down payment. So it's really case by case. But as I said, I really focus on keeping the fee structure as low as possible, since these are short-term loans, and really focusing on the fact that people don't want to pay any unnecessary taxes, tack into any taxable accounts, sell stocks, things like that.
And I know what a bridge loan is, but give us a definition.
Sure. A bridge loan is essentially using the equity you have in your current home to fund the purchase of a new one. So that's the bridge into the new house, so to speak.
And that differs from an equity line of credit how?
On paper, it really doesn't, because an equity line is using that equity to get you into the new home as well. It's just a different loan product. So they're going to have their respective fee structures and process to get each of them done.
Interesting. Interesting. It's amazingly complicated. I know that, you know, people joke. I had this lender friend who worked at Home Savings of America, and he joked his diet was Maalox and scotch. he was an English guy. I can't remember his name. He was a funny guy. But it's stress. I mean, it's stress in my end of it. It's stress in your end. Everything is stressful. You mentioned that you're getting plenty of inquiries, and I just did the year-to-date sales, and, you know, sales are better year-to-date closings than they were in the last 6 months of 2024, and much, much better than the first 17 weeks of 2024. So, you know, it's happening. When someone comes to you and they go, I don't know, you know, what's a fixed rate today? What's an adjustable rate? What kind of percentage what are people choosing and why?
Two ways to answer that question, I think. It's going to be, one, depending on the loan size, and then two, depending on just the person's, you know, risk tolerance and anxiety levels, to be honest. Larger loan amounts are obviously greatly more affected by a lower interest rate. So if you're getting a $2 million loan, you're going to save more on a monthly basis with an adjustable rate mortgage because it has a lower interest rate. If you're getting a $200,000 loan, that monthly savings is pretty nominal. So why would you take that risk of an adjustable? So part one is, you know, larger loans generally to go to those adjustable rate mortgages because the savings are more significant. But part two, if you're the type of person that just wants to sleep at night and not worry about your housing payment, then I suggest the 30-year fixed. But if you're the type of person that wants to be involved as a borrower, is going to keep an eye on the markets, I kind of recommend checking in every 6 months. If you have an adjustable rate mortgage, see what your rate would look like if it were to adjust that day. That way you can kind of stay abreast of changes in the markets, the financial world, political situations, and feel comfortable as well. But an informed borrower that's active can safely get an adjustable rate mortgage without risk these days.
And we still have, I had a listing I sold in February of this year, and the owners were older, and they had taken out $1 million loan. Boy, it was a long time. It was, you know, might have been 10 years. Is that possible that you got a low fixed rate for 10 years and then it goes adjustable?
Yes. Yes. Well, the common time frames are 3, 5, 7, and 10 years.
Right. And so someone feels they're not going to be in the house that long, or they feel that they're going to be coming into some money, or they feel like, you know, their job situation will increase. They can choose 3, 5, 7, 10 and then it adjusts, and they'll either have the money to pay for it, or they can roll the dice and see where interest rates are. So this loan was due April of 2025 and we closed in February. So the children and everybody were very happy, and they had this low mortgage for 10 years, $1 million loan. My guest is Prosperity Home Mortgage lender John McCuskey, working out of Santa Barbara at 805-456-9120. Another question I had was, well, let's go back a week or two ago. I was talking about, I talked to a different lender, and they were talking about how, boy, some lenders can really not be honest and maybe promise a lower rate. You know, someone comes to you, John, and you tell them it's X, and someone else does it for, you know, a point less. And sadly, sometimes they're really not qualified for that. And then this lender was telling me a story about, I think, the 11th hour. The lender calls up and goes, oh, goodness, the underwriters pulled some shenanigans. We can't get you that rate. You're going to have to pay the rate, the higher rate that they were really qualified for from the beginning. We don't want to mention any names, but does this happen?
Unfortunately, it does. I think it's a sad byproduct of the industry as a whole, to be honest. You know, everyone's looking for their next paycheck. And I think that that leads people to be a little less forthright in their communication. But in the end, it doesn't do anybody any good. I mean, you wouldn't go back to a restaurant if the service was terrible and the food was bad. So that person that's misquoting that rate or leading their clients down the wrong path isn't going to see any repeat business or referrals from anybody else. So it's best to be honest and forthright up front, ask the difficult questions early, get all the paperwork we need up front versus waiting till the last minute or piecemealing it in throughout the process. If we do all of our work up front and make sure we have all of our numbers exact, then you don't run into these types of issues.
Right. The old pre-approval letter, no real estate agent wants to work with a buyer that doesn't have a solid pre-approval letter from some local lender. And many listing agents, myself included, will literally put down, if it's, you know, if it's a loan is involved, they want a pre-approval letter from a local lender. Sadly, not that there are not any good lenders in LA, but they're not as vested.
Correct. Yeah, we have to see these people every day. We work with them. You know, our kids go to school together. Our word is worth a lot here. So we have to maintain that.
Right. So that's very common. That's very common. When, you know, in the news, there's been a lot of borrower fraud. There's the attorney general out of New York that was accused of buying a fiveplex, calling it a fourplex. So she got the 1-4 rate. Buying a house in Virginia, claiming it was her primary residence when she had to have her primary residence in New York to be the attorney general. And the third one was supposedly buying a property and naming her father as her husband. I can't say that all those three statements are accurate and true, but you see this go on?
I've only seen one instance of fraud that I can recall in the last 15 years, and that was a fraudulent pay stub and W-2 form probably about 8 years ago. Turns out his business didn't actually exist, and as soon as we asked him that question, he disappeared. So we really don't see that here in Santa Barbara. I mean, my prime lending area is probably San Diego to San Francisco in that range, just because that's where my sphere of influence is. We get a high quality of borrower. You know, they're generally well-qualified people. They're gainfully employed. They're honest. They're great to work with. We're really fortunate. I think you might see that in different areas of the country. Unfortunately, I think with desperation comes bad acts as well. So you might see someone, you know, falsifying loan documents, things like that, when they're in a last-ditch effort. So don't really see that much that here.
And what about, you know, I mean, look, right is right and wrong is wrong. What about a little fudging where someone, you know, is buying a home and they want it to be their primary residence, but maybe they have their other home, they haven't sold it yet. You know, I mean, if you're not aware of it, obviously you can't advise somebody, but I imagine people might fudge stuff like that.
I'm sure all the time. I mean, really what the underwriter is looking for is motivation, reasonable evidence for that motivation as well. You know, if you can't call it a primary residence if you're going to physically drive 300 miles to work every day. You know, people commute 60, 70 miles. That's fairly reasonable in a lot of areas in America. But if your commute is that far away, they're not going to allow you to call it a primary from your place of work. If your place of employment's in Texas and you don't work remotely and that's where your physical business location is, good luck. You know, it's pretty obvious when people are trying to pull something over because the story doesn't add up.
Right.
And underwriters and good loan officers will see it right up front.
Right, right. And you can't be a party to it because, you know, it's just not worth it. Do you remember Joni Gibson, lender for Chase?
I do not.
Back in the day. You know what? She might have retired by 2008. She was, I knew her in the 90s. And
Good for her.
I brought a client. I brought a client to her, and this guy was in his 40s, never owned real estate his entire life. And he bought a house on an acre up in the hills and a condo on the beach, all within 30 days. She did both loans. And he was saying that, you know, they're not investment homes. It's just, you know, both are going to be my homes. Now, I guess you had to call one a second home. But I remember her going through hoops with Chase to show that this guy was, in fact, not going to buy one and rent it out. He wanted to get the better rate, and he got it. And basically, he just bought two homes within the same town. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, that's common in resort areas and beach communities. You know, there's a lot of wealthy people that take Montecito, for example. We have a house on, you know, East Valley Drive, and we want to have a condo down at Miramar. You know, that's legitimate. If you can afford it and have the money, you go spend your weekends at the beach. And but they're only a mile and a half apart.
And you don't get penalized on the loan. Okay, Prosperity Home Mortgage Lender John McCuskey works out of the State Street Santa Barbara office. If you have any questions about loans, you can call him, reach him at 805-456-9120. 456-9120, John McCuskey. Hey, thanks for calling in. Lots of good information. I learned a lot.
Thank you, Mark. That was fun. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're so welcome. Bye for now.
We'll talk to you shortly.
Okay. Man, 40% cash. Who knew? I don't even know how he knows that. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. We come back, I'm going to give you a chance to some context to the poem I read, The Garden of My Heart, a couple of weeks ago. And we got some real estate sales and what's going on, specific homes that sold and then resold. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.